Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Quick reminder that you can join me and Tavis Smiley to mark his 20th year in broadcasting at Cooper Union tomorrow night. We'll talk about politics, race, the media, turning failure into success, and whatever else comes up. And there'll be a lot of audience participation. So come on down tomorrow night at the Cooper Union. Tickets on the events page at WNYC.org. Well, we were talking about how your phone and your iPad know where you are. In other privacy news, you probably remember the tragic suicide of Tyler Clementi, the 18-year-old Rutgers student who jumped off the George Washington Bridge in September after a romantic encounter with another man was broadcast online. Clementi's roommate, Darun Ravi, and his friend, Molly Way, are allegedly responsible for secretly capturing and broadcasting the private encounter. They were initially charged with invasion of privacy, but now Ravi has been indicted on 15 counts, including not just invasion of privacy, but also bias intimidation and tampering with evidence, charges which, if he's convicted of, could mean 5 to 10 years in prison. Just Ravi charged with this. Joining me to parse the legal implications, why the allegations rose to the level of hate crimes, and to get into the broader conversation about cyberbullying, is Daniel Solov, a professor at the George Washington University Law School and author of the forthcoming book, Nothing to Hide, The False Trade-Off Between Privacy and Security. Professor Solov, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we should be very clear in this, as in any case of an allegation, that no one has been convicted of anything in this case. But that said, I think it's very easy to see how these events, if true, exhibit a clear invasion of privacy. But a hate crime, can you explain the difference and why you think the charges were kicked up to that level?
Well, I don't fully understand the circumstances which kicked them up to the level of a hate crime. So it could be that when the facts were presented to the grand jury, facts that we will find out a lot more about in the trial and in the days to come, that there was some indication of some kind of animus that he might have had that would trigger a hate crime.
So if Tyler Clementi had been having this encounter with a woman and it was recorded and broadcast, how different would this case be from a legal standpoint?
Well, I'm not a hate crime expert. I'm a privacy, and so I really couldn't tell you a lot about what would trigger a hate crime or not trigger a hate crime. As far as the privacy charges, regardless of whether Clementi was romantically involved with a man or a woman, that charge, that crime, invasion of privacy, would still stand because the crime does not talk about same sex or opposite sex. It talks about invading someone's privacy when they're in a private space and are captured in a particular form of sexual contact or where various private parts are exposed or so on. This is a law that actually a lot of states have. They're in a species of laws that are peeping Tom laws or laws that deal with video voyeurism.
Do you think that this case could set a precedent that might have ripple effects for other cases related to privacy around the country?
Well, I think so. I think in terms of the privacy claim, I haven't seen anything in the facts to indicate that the issues in particular are that novel, other than it was a webcam, because we've seen a lot of cases involving people trying to snap pictures or take video of other people unsuspectingly in a sexual encounter or in the nude, upskirt photos and so on. So we've seen a lot of these cases. I think what makes this particularly unique is these facts and this particular scenario makes this unique. unique. But as far as the law of the peeping Tom video voyeurism invasion of privacy laws, I think that actually looks like a pretty strong case against this young man.
Following this case, New Jersey enacted the nation's toughest anti-bullying law, an update to their already existing anti-bullying law. 45 states have these kinds of laws, including New York as well as New Jersey. What do these laws do, and what do you know about the New Jersey law specifically?
I don't know a lot about the New Jersey law specifically. I've been studying kind of all the different laws, and so keeping them all, knowing all the precise details of each one, I couldn't go into each one. But broadly speaking, the laws typically do the following. They typically define bullying to include harassment on the internet or using some kind of electronic means. So they broaden the definition of bullying in some cases, and they also mandate that schools have programs to better combat cyberbullying, something that, you know, schools had, some had been doing an okay job, but a lot really hadn't been doing much of anything, hadn't been adequately investigating them. And so these laws mandate that they do better. I think one of the flaws in a lot of the laws is they really don't specify what schools are actually supposed to do or how.
And you recently started a company called Teach Privacy, which consults with schools on privacy issues, online gossip, and cyberbullying. What are the biggest challenges that you think schools face on this issue?
I think the biggest challenge is that the laws very complicated. There's a lot of different law out there, and the technologies are constantly changing. So to actually understand the moving landscape and all the different things involved can be very difficult for a school because that's not their realm of expertise. And so my goal with the company is to help schools because this is what I focus on. I look at all these laws. I understand the technologies, and I think that, you know, whatever schools do, they really should seek some form of expert guidance on how to handle some of these issues. There's so many legal pitfalls and potential problems when you engage in, you know, searching an electronic device, for example, investigating a case, that schools need to know a lot more about. And they currently don't.
Nick in Manhattan has a question for you. Nick, you're on WNYC.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering, in this specific case, you know, that clearly, you know, it, you know, to videotape somebody in a private moment, like, you know, having sex, is an invasion of privacy. But the fact that he then chose to broadcast it, doesn't that show a certain kind of malicious intent on his part?
The difference between invading his privacy by doing the taping and invading it by distributing the video. In fact, I think that the argument the prosecution wants to make against the roommate was that he was acting maliciously toward Clementi because Clementi was gay, and that the surreptitious video streaming, the streaming, somehow led directly to the suicide.
Well, I think that you know, we'd have to really get into the mental state of Robbie to really understand what was going on in his mind and why he did what he did. I think clearly what he did was inexcusable. I think it was wrong. I think it was very problematic, and I think he should be punished for it. Whether or not he did what he did because he harbored hatred toward gays, that is a question that we'll find out when we find out the evidence. Did he do it because he thought he was just doing it as a prank, or because he just didn't like his roommate, or did he do it because he didn't like his roommate because his roommate was gay?
And one of the reported pieces of evidence is a tweet from Ravi that says, "Roommate asked for the room till midnight. I went into Molly's room and turned on my webcam. I saw him making out with a dude. Yay." So I imagine that'll be entered as evidence to his state of mind. There was also a charge of tampering with evidence in this case. We only have 20 seconds left, but have you looked at that? That's one of the reasons it could become so serious.
Well, apparently he tried to delete the evidence when he was under the heat. He tried to delete that. And then the question
tweets.
Is, Exactly. And did he delete it in an attempt to cover something up, or did he delete it because he was just really afraid? Yeah. What was his motive in doing that?
Dan Nasoloff, professor at George Washington University Law School. His forthcoming book, Nothing to Hide, The False Trade-Off Between Privacy and Security. We really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.